Morning from Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give sacrifice of fools, for they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou upon the earth, and therefore let thy words be few. For a dream cometh through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by multitude of words. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better it is that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. Suffer not the mouth to cause the flesh to sin, neither say thou before the angel that it was an error. Why should God be angry at thy voice and destroy the work of thy hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words there are many vanities, but fear thou God. If thou seest the oppression of the poor, and violent perverting of justice and righteousness in a province, marvel not at that matter, for he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there are none higher than they. Moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased whom eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, and whether he eat little or much, but in the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a great evil that I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to be hurt. But their riches perish by evil travail, and he begotteth the son, and there is nothing in his hand. And he came forth from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a great evil, that all points that he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that laboreth for the wind? All his days shall be eateth in the darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and fitting for one to eat and to drink, and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor, it is the gift of God, for he shall not be much remember the days of his time, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he lacketh nothing for his soul to all that he desireth. Yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth in this, vanity, and all that is evil increase. If a man beset 100 children, and live many years, so that the days of his years are many, and his soul is not filled with good, also he that hath no burial, I say that their untimely birth is better than he. For he cometh with vanity, and departeth in darkness. His name shall be covered with darkness. Moreover, it hath not seen the sun, nor known anything, and he hath more rest than the other. Yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told, yet hath he not seen good. Do not all go to one place? All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. For what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wanderings of the desire. This is also vanity, vexation of spirit. That which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is man. Neither may he be content with him that be mightier than he. Seeing that there are many things that increase vanity, what then is man the better? For who knoweth what is good for man in his life, all the days of his vain life, which he hath spent as a shadow? For who can tell a man what he shall be after him under the sun?
Tom, read the scripture this morning. How many of you ever once in a while you were listening to that said, huh? It's a little confusing, isn't it? How many of you, I challenged you to do this earlier on when I, maybe before I started the series, or maybe just as we got started, how many have taken the time over the last few weeks to read through the book of Ecclesiastes at least once? You've read the whole book at least once in the last weeks. I would really encourage you to do that. As I studied the book, that was probably the best thing for me to do to catch a thought flow of what's going on here in the book of Ecclesiastes. We know about Solomon. He was born to be king. God chose him early, and he knew he grew up with that mentality, and the day came when through David's work in Bathsheba, Solomon was handed the kingdom. It didn't take him long to consolidate, that's the word I'm looking for, the kingdom underneath his power. Boy, that was bad, consolidate. To consolidate the kingdom underneath him. And Solomon went on to have great success in short order. He built one of the wonders of the world in building the temple. He also built a beautiful palace for himself and for his queens. He conquered more territory, had great peace, and God granted him great wisdom and great riches. To this man that was given much wisdom, you know, with knowledge comes problems. And I think with the wisdom that God gave Solomon came the problem of trying to figure things out. And so he writes a book. I do not believe the book of Ecclesiastes is the result of a bitter man. I do not believe the book of Ecclesiastes is an inspired record of a confused heart. I do not believe the book of Ecclesiastes is bad advice through most of it until you get to the very last verses and then he finally got it right. I believe rather that like some of Paul's writings where Paul will have a thesis and work his way through the thesis, I truly believe there's a thesis thought. Maybe one of the strengths of my preaching and the weaknesses of my preaching is I often go looking for a big umbrella and then I pack everything underneath that umbrella. And so I've done this with the book of Ecclesiastes. I have found a big umbrella, and I have made everything conform to that. And if you don't necessarily agree with all my conclusions, that's okay. The theme, I believe, because of verse 2 in chapter 1, and then repeated again at chapter 12, is that all life is futile. We talked about that early on in the first two chapters of the book of Ecclesiastes. He works off, I believe, a thesis statement that is in chapter 1, verse 3, where he says, what do you get? What do you get? What's life going to give you that's really worth having? You eat a great meal, and you're satisfied for a while, and then you're hungry again. And then if you get the same meal again and again and again and again, that which was great once is not so great anymore. Oh no, ribeye again, you know? Believe it or not, you get tired of that which sometimes is good. And so Solomon in his in his zeal to find something that satisfied, tried everything again and again. He satiated himself with wealth and entertainment, women, and what he concluded to, it's all just grasping the wind. And then as we talked in chapter 3 last week, I believe that Solomon says, no, wait, there's something better. There is an answer. What profit does a man get? It's grasping the wind, it's chasing the wind. But then he said, there is something better. And that is to acknowledge that God has gifted us with this moment. There's a time for death, there's a time for life, there's a time for peace, for war, there's a time for getting and losing. And in all these things, God has given us the opportunity to embrace the moment, to realize the spiritual response to every moment. I believe the book of Ecclesiastes then is consistent with Pauline sanctification in the New Testament, where Paul encourages us to do whatever our hand finds to do it, Colossians 3, to walk, to so walk, to so obey, to acknowledge God in things, but yet to be a doer, to be active. Well, I see this theme then, that nothing is better. I think he kicks it off in chapter 3, end of chapter 2, verse 24. He repeats it again in chapter 3. And even in the text that Tom read for us today, look with me, if you would, at chapter 5, verse 18. And one more little sidebar here. If you're struggling to follow the text or follow some of the thinking, let me encourage you to find a Bible, if yours doesn't do this, that divides the text into paragraphs. Okay, that divides poetry and paragraphs, not just verses. And find it, and then read it in multiple texts. When it comes to Hebrew poetry, you'll learn more when you read it in different translations. Read it in the King James, if you will, New King James, but read it in something else too. And I think it shines a lot of light on what is going on. Chapter 5, verse 18, I see this theme then that nothing is better. Repeated. Verse 18, here's what I have seen. Here's a conclusion I have. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life. And notice now the acknowledgement which God gives him, for it is his heritage. It's what he gets. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. I believe that from this point forward in the text, starting with today's Sunday school lesson, chapters 3 and 4, it's working off this one idea that God has given us today. Enjoy it. Take advantage of it. Use it to the glory of God today. Now, being the intelligent man that he is, he says, you know, there's some problems with this. And sin has caused many problems. This morning in Sunday school, we saw in chapters 3 and 4, I believe, hindrances to enjoying God's gifts. We're in your outline here. The inability to keep an eternal perspective hinders the enjoyment of God's gifts. We see this kicked off, I believe, in chapter 3, verse 11, the end of the verse, where he says, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to end. Here I am in this moment that I have. I don't have the past. I don't have the future. I have this moment. God, however, is eternal. And he sees every moment in an eternal perspective. That's a hard thing for me to do. I believe that's a hindrance that keeps us from understanding and enjoying God's gifts. I believe a fatalism, number two, is the inequities of life can hinder our enjoyment of God's gifts. There's wickedness and there's righteousness, and sometimes wickedness gets treated like righteousness and righteousness gets treated like wickedness, and this is a hindrance to enjoying all that God has given. I believe that hopelessness and fatalism, number three, hinder our enjoyment of God's gifts. I'm going quickly here because this was Sunday school. In verses 18 through 20, he talks about the animals, and he says there's a dog over there and it eats and breathes and sleeps and dies. And here is me. And I eat and sleep and breathe and die. What difference is there between me and the dog? Well, that fact that there's a lot of things in common between me and the dog. make this very intelligent man, this very wise man, Solomon, say, so what is life? What is life? And that fatalistic idea could keep you from enjoying the good things that God has given. Oppression. Number four, in chapter 4, verses 1 to 3, he as king points out that there are people who are abused. There are people who are mistreated. War does this. Family relationships can do this. There are people who are oppressed. And notice the repetition. They have no comforter. There is no comforter. There's no one to help these people. He says this is a hindrance, something that he sees that I believe clouds his mind concerning this. Jealousy. One man works hard and is accused of somebody else of doing things wrong. Jealousy can hinder our enjoyment of God's gifts. And then loneliness, a lack of relationships, can hinder our enjoyment of God's good gifts. Verses 9 through 16 of chapter 4 is some classic passages and understanding. And he ends with a difficult text. And here's one that you'd really need to read in more than one translation. But I think what's kind of going on in verses 13 to 16 is something like this. He says, here's a king. He's an old fool. He doesn't want to listen to anybody. Here's this young guy. He's wise. People listen to him. But even as they follow him, they won't necessarily follow the next. He's emphasizing the importance of people and relationships. And he's saying that power is not so great after all. Power and fame are fleeting things. I sense a tone change as we get to chapter 5. And I think in chapters 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, what's really going on here is Solomon is giving us advice now. These chapters sound a whole lot like the book of Proverbs, chapters 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And I believe in the context then of his futility, everything's futile. Therefore, what does a man get? Take advantage of what you do have, enjoy, embrace life, embrace the gifts of God, use them for God's glory. In that context, he gives, I think, advice for different avenues of life in chapters 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, really the rest of the book. And so I've titled this morning's sermon, Wisdom, that we might enjoy the gifts of God in spite of life's futility. And the first wisdom has to do with speech. In verses 1 through 7, he talks about being careful of what we say before God. I love the word picture that he gives us in chapter 5, verse 1. He says, walk prudently when you go to the house of God and draw near to hear rather than give the sacrifice of fools. What is the sacrifice of fools? A whole lot of talking. Here's this guy, he comes to the priest and he has a lamb and he offers a sacrifice. It's cost him something. It cost him that lamb. And here comes a fool. He has no lamb. He gives the priest an excuse of why he doesn't have a lamb. He tells the priest that he actually has a better idea, that he knows more than God about what would make a good sacrifice. He goes on and tires the priest's ears. He brings a sacrifice of fools. He brings not work, but words. Lots of words, careless words. I think what he tells us then is that much talking reveals careless thinking. In verses 2 and 3, don't be rash with your mouth. Don't just talk on and on. Don't say incessant things. Americana quotes President Abe Lincoln as saying, it is better to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubts. Solomon says this, I think, very well. We're at the end of this verse 3. He says, a fool's voice is known by his many words. We've all been in a situation, maybe it's a business meeting, maybe it's a Sunday school class, unfortunately, maybe here at Trinity Baptist Church. Maybe it's a family reunion where there's one voice that you cringe to hear. There's somebody who has an opinion on everything. And they have multiple opinions on multiple things. And they just talk on and on and on and on. And there's something inside of you that begins to say, would you just shut up? If you've never been in that situation, you might want to do some self-reflection right now. Maybe you're that person. We've all been in those situations, and really, it's a sacrifice of fools. It's careless talking. Much talking reveals that that person is a fool. We need to be careful how we speak before God. And then he talks about, I believe in verses 4 to 7, about broken words distancing us from God. So this is wisdom. This is wisdom for enjoying God's good gifts. He says, be careful about many words. He says, be careful about broken words. We make ourselves liars when we say we are going to do something and then fail to do it. Pastors and teachers and parents and coaches are often at fault here. We promise kids that we will do something, and then we are perhaps unable or just don't have the character to do what we have said we're going to do. I note in this text several consequences that are listed here about those who say they're going to do something and then do not do it. Notice in verse 4 that we become fools to the irritation of God. When you make a vow to God and do not pay it, he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. We irritate God. I think number 2, we sin. Look at verse 6. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin. We don't like that word sin. We'd rather say something else, but call it something else. But when we say we are going to do something and then fail to do it, it says here that we sin. Solomon is quoting, perhaps, or repeating an idea that Moses said in Deuteronomy 23, 21 to 23. I read, when you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay to pay it. For the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and it would be a sin to you. But if you abstain from vowing, it shall not be sin to you. That which is gone from your lips shall you shall keep and perform. For you voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. If you say you're going to do something to God, then you better do it. I think what he says in verse 6, though, do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the works of your hands? I think verse 6 here is saying that we sin against God when we tell somebody we're going to do something and then don't do it. In the King James, perhaps you heard, as Tom read, it says that why should you sin against the angel of God? We all know that that Greek word, that our word angel comes from, I know this is written in Hebrew, but our word angel comes from angelos, which is a Greek word. It means messenger. I believe we use that English word angel to talk about a heavenly being, a specific person. And often in the scriptures, when it says angel, that's what it is. But when the King James says angel here, really the Hebrew word is the word messenger, hence the fact that the King James translators use that word. I think a lot of the other translations use instead the word messenger. So he says at the end of verse 6 that why should you be nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. New King James says that. One of my commentaries referred me to priests in Malachi. I think this is confusing the issue. I think what's really going on here is he's saying that when we lie to someone or say that we're going to do something to someone or for someone and then do not, we're lying to God because they are in the image of God. When we misspeak or we misrepresent ourselves to someone, we are really the messenger of God. They are in God's image. We are misspeaking. We are misrepresenting. We are lying to God, I think is what he's saying here. I think it's important then to do what you say you're going to do or do what you're committed to do. I'm a little bit of an obsessive, compulsive personality, maybe even a bit of a control freak. I'm irritated when I am late. I am irritated when other people are late. I realize that I have a bit of a problem there. But I also see that there's a certain obligation to being on time has to do with just doing what you say you're going to do. I think there's a third consequence of saying something and not doing it, and that is we become indebted to God. Look at chapter 5, verse 7. For in the multitude of dreams and many words there is also vanity, but fear God. There's a certain obligation that we have to God in all this. I want to chase a rabbit here. Twice in this text, he talks about dreams. In verse 3, he says, for a dream comes through much activity. And then in verse 7, he says, for in the multitude of dreams there and many words there is also vanity. Chapter 5, verse 3, NIV reads this, as a dream comes when there are many cares. As a dream comes when there are many cares. A man once told me that when we dream, it is our subconscious taking a walk, our subconscious mind exploring possibilities. I think sometimes people very wrongly judge themselves or others or make decisions based on dreams. Dreams are a reflection of our fears. Dreams are often a reflection of our wanderings. But dreams are nothing. And I think that's what Solomon is trying to use dreams as an illustration of when in verse 7 he says, for in the multitude of dreams and many words, there's vanity. Somebody who just talking and talking and talking and talking, well, that's emptiness. And someone who's got a lot of dreams, that's emptiness. I think that's the illustration that Solomon is using here. So don't put stock in dreams. Now, back to my outline. Wisdom, that we might enjoy the gifts of God in spite of life's futility. Number one, be careful what you say before God. Number two, expect to lose labor and resources to government. I think that's what's going on in verses 8 and 9 in my Bible. They're paragraphs together here. Verse 8 is, and then 9's a little separate. I think in verse 8 we understand this. Don't expect righteousness from men in government offices. Let me read this in the New King James. If you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter. For high official watches over high official, and higher officials are over them. So you go down to City Hall and somebody mistreats you there. And you go, oh no, that should have never happened. I think what Solomon is saying, you know why they're corrupt? Because their boss is corrupt. And you know why they're corrupt? Because their boss is corrupt. What should you expect? It is men looking out for men in an organization that's full of men. And when we have sinners watching over sinners to make sure sinners do right so that other sinners could have, what do you expect? That there's going to be oppression in a situation like this. I think spiritually we can learn from this that we shouldn't get in relationships, understand that people behave foolishly and wickedly. We should expect that, though we should strive to do differently. And then in verse 9, I think this is what's being said. Even when government is doing the right things, they will take from the general economy. I read again, moreover, the profit of the land is for all. Even the king is served from the field. Government is expensive. It's going to cost you something. I think that's what's being said. And so we learn wisdom for our words and wisdom concerning government. And then in verses 10 through 17, I think another bit of wisdom that Solomon is giving us in enjoying life is this: money can destroy your ability to be satisfied. Several wise things about money follow. Verse 11, we find the more you have, the more you spend. In this verse especially, he seems to be talking about the fact that you have employees. Here's a guy that makes a lot of money, but he's got a lot of employees. What's the result? He doesn't get to enjoy his money. He watches the money come in, and the money goes out in his employees' check. We buy a better car, a newer car, and what happens? You have to buy better insurance for your better car, right? Do you get to eat the insurance? Do you get to enjoy the insurance? Hopefully not. No, it's just there. You get to see it. That's it. The more money you have, the more money you lose. Verse 12, I think what's being said is here is the guy who works and sleeps is the better off than the one who worries that someone might take his money. Those that are owned by their money examine stock reports and check their account balances. I like when I can go someplace and take my keys off and throw them away. You ever able to? That was one thing nice back in the days. We used to go to family camp at Northland. It was a nice week. Take the key ring off, throw it in the seat of the car. No one was going to steal your car there anyway. Throw it in the car and leave it there for the week. No doors that you had to unlock, nothing you had to make sure about. Every key I carry is a responsibility, something else I have to take care of. In verses 13 through 15, I think Solomon is giving us wisdom concerning the guy who accumulates a lot of wealth. And then he says, this is a severe evil which I have seen. And he talks about the fact that you get a lot of money, and guess what? Through some misfortune, it disappears. Verses 16 to 17, Solomon mentions another severe evil. Just exactly as he came, so shall he go. It doesn't matter how much money you make. You're going to lose it all, every dime, because no one gets to take any of it with you. Solomon is giving us wisdom here. Wisdom that we might enjoy life as God has given it to us. Be careful what you say. Expect government to take away your resources. Money can destroy your ability to be satisfied. And then in chapter 6, I think he talks about some specific people who just have a lot of difficulties enjoying life. He talks about some things. First, in verses 1 and 2, he says, there's this evil. I've seen this a lot, he says. Here's this guy. He's got riches and wealth and honor. He's got everything he wants. But he doesn't get to enjoy it. Solomon doesn't tell us what happens here. Maybe it's war. Maybe it's bad health. Maybe it's just a real cranky spirit, not sure what the problem is. But he's got riches and wealth and honor, and he doesn't get to enjoy it. Circumstances can prohibit us from enjoying what we have. Another thing he says, it's a frustration about the fact that some people just can't enjoy it. He talks about longevity. If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that his days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goodness, it's not worth a whole lot. Longevity is no guarantee that you will enjoy the gifts of God. Verses 7 and 9, I think he talks about the fact that riches and poverty, wisdom and foolishness, none of these have an advantage over the other. You can be rich and enjoy God's goodness. You can be poor and enjoy God's goodness. You can be very intelligent and enjoy God's goodness. You can be not so intelligent and still, maybe by accident, enjoy God's goodness. There's no guarantee. Then I think in verses 10 and 11, he makes a point concerning the providence of God. Whatever one is, he has been named already. Whatever you are, God already has called it, for it is known that he is man, and he cannot contend with him who is mightier than he, since there are many things that increase vanity. How is man the better? So another frustration or another thing that may keep people from enjoying the gifts of God is just the providence of God. He comes to a conclusion at the end of verse 12. For who knows what is good for man in life? All the days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow. Who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? We are here to glorify God. And God has given us many opportunities to enjoy his good gifts. Thanks to sin, there's major hindrances. Solomon, I think, in chapters 5 and following, gives us great wisdom for relationships, for money, for life. Chapter 7, Sunday school, next 2 weeks from now, going to pick up a lot of different things for enjoying goodness and joy in life. Chapter 8 is going to talk about authority. Chapter 9 is going to talk about death. Solomon's going to give us wisdom for all of these things. The bottom line still is this. Life is only satisfying in Jesus Christ. He keeps using the phrase under the sun. He keeps coming back to the idea of vanity. And the only thing that is truly going to be lasting that you can take with you is Jesus. The only thing that is truly satisfying in this life is the next life. Under the sun, there's nothing. It's only above the sun. So nothing is better than to embrace what God has given you. Embrace the opportunities. Live wisely. That's better than living foolishly. It's better to live intelligently than to live stupidly. It's better to do good. He advocates these things, but being good and being wise and even being super, super holy, it's not going to give you satisfaction in this life. That's only found in Jesus Christ. Father God, I pray that we might learn from this book and have a biblical, sanctified philosophy in life. Thank you for loving us so much. In Jesus' name, amen.